All here. Thank you. We have a quorum is present. We'll post the colors, and Senator Dianne Rosenbaum will lead us in the pledge, please. Today's invocation is by Pastor Brian Arnold from the Lynchwood Church of God in Portland.
Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for these men and women who have come to serve our state. Lord, for the burden that you have placed on their heart. Lord, I pray that you would continue, Lord, to pour out your wisdom. Lord, as we live in a nation and a society where the lines of black and white, the lines of morality seem to be receding, Lord. Lord, the areas of gray are advancing. God, I pray that we would not seek to justify our own hearts, but rather to uphold the righteousness of yours. God, may we not fall into the worldview that says it's our job to come up with the ideas, and it's your job to bless them, but Lord, may that role reverse. May we be people that are desperately seeking your will and your wisdom and your love, that we may be a blessing to your truth. And so, Lord, we just ask for your wisdom, Lord, for unity, for knowledge, and for understanding, that you be with us this morning. In your name, amen.
Thank you, Pastor Brian Arnold, for your invocation. I'd like to send a courtesy to the Senate to you. Thank you, Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, for your leading the Senate in the Pledge of Allegiance. Courtesies. Recognize Senator Rod Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Brian Arnold, who just gave the invocation, is a young man that I've known since he was born. He is the youth pastor of our church, and he also happens to live in our home in the granny flat apartment that we built for Billy's mom. Billy's mom has passed on, and so Brian and his young wife, who is a teacher in the Lake Oswego district, have come to live in our apartment. Brian also will be fully ordained as a Church of God minister next month, or in 2 months, I guess, at our annual camp meeting. So if you'd like to come and say hi to this young minister, I'm expecting great things from him. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Ryan Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that courtesies be extended to the 7th and 8th grade Perrydale Middle School students who are in the gallery to our rear. Perrydale is the home of the Pirates and has a long tradition of academic and athletic success. They actually boast a zero dropout rate, which is pretty good in the state of Oregon, and they log in more community service hours than any other school in the nation. I'd ask that courtesies be extended to the middle school and the gallery, Mr. President.
Thank you, Perrydale. Glad to see you here. And a great school, great place, and I'd like to extend a courtesy to the Senate to you. Hope you're having a great day in your state capital. It's an honor and privilege that you're here, and we're delighted you're in the state Senate chamber today. Thank you. Recognize Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. At my desk today is my new intern for the closing third to the last week of the legislative session. Her name is Christina Wood Hardesty, and she is an honor student at Boise High School in Boise, Idaho. She is a singer, has won awards for her singing. She is an accomplished volleyball player. And she is also involved in volunteer work for environmental causes, including our beloved Metolius. And she will be working in my office for this week. And most importantly, Christina is my niece.
Thank you, Christina, for being here. And thank you for coming over from Boise and taking care of your aunt. Hope you have a good time between now and the end of the session and for helping Senator Burdick out. I'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. Thank you. I got Senator Doug Whitson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm honored this morning to have at my desk the head coach of the OIT Hustle and Owl basketball team, Mr. Danny Miles. Coach Miles, you're welcome to be here, and please do. And, Mr. President, please extend courtesy of the Senate to head coach Danny Miles.
Thank you, Coach Miles. Good to have you here. Done a great job with the Owls, tremendous job over the years, and great program, great school, and so it's an honor and privilege you would come to here and sit on the Senate floor with us. I'd like to extend a courtesy to the Senate to you and wish you the best. You're still coaching, right? I thought so. And good luck to your team, except when you play Western Oregon University. So go Owls. Further courtesies. Remonstrances. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Mr. President, I've been thinking a lot about gratitude. This last couple days ago, I was having a very important conversation with my son, and the conversation revolved around how do you train a dog. And I told him that when he was much smaller, he was a baby, I used to wear a backpack with him on the back of it as we would train our dog Stella and tune her up for hunting season, and he would be in the backpack and I would give her hand signals. And I thought a lot about him and that backpack. Mr. President and colleagues, that backpack came from the community of the state capitol. It was Jim Stembridge and a whole bunch of members of the committee staff that all chipped in when my son was born and bought us that backpack. And throughout his difficult first 5 months of life, and throughout last summer, and my family, and all of the courtesy that was extended to my family, Mr. President, from you, from Senator Farioli, through that one session where I spent so many months in intensive care with him, and through last week, I just don't want to miss an opportunity to say thank you to the community of the state capitol, to all of the senators that, even though we have all of our policy discussions really are a family. And to all of Judy's staff and to, Mr. President, your staff and the committee staff, you know, as I look at a six-year-old and I look at the thought of a new puppy and I think of that old backpack now, it makes me very full of gratitude. And you never know if you're going to get the chance to say thank you before something could happen. And so I didn't want this week to start off without a tremendous amount of gratitude from my family to the community of the Capitol. So, Mr. President, thank you, and thank you for the thought of a backpack with a kid stuck in it.
Thank you. I'd like to join Berger, please.
Mr. President, the economic situation that we find ourselves in Oregon is neither a Democratic crisis or a Republican crisis. It is a global financial crisis that is facing governments across the world. This really came to me last night as I listened to questions of the Prime Minister. I thought they were questions to the Oregon legislature. It was about mortgage loans and banks and General Motors and unemployment. Today, the United States is facing a meltdown in the American business world. In Oregon, our unemployment rates in my district of 14% or Eastern Oregon in 20% is a sign to government that we must be willing to take action that is in the public interest. We are still looking at bills that in normal times would have some impression of need, but in these times, maybe we should only be looking at ways to help major employers, forcing banks to stop sitting on their loan funds, keeping credit scores inaccessibly high, and loan approvals non-existent, and limiting the regulations that restrict our ability to move toward economic recovery. Mr. President, the public is growing weary of the inaction of government to fully face their dire financial circumstances. We need our minds collectively on the role we need to play for the best economic strategy. Every day there are more businesses closing. Every day there are more calls to the suicide lines in Oregon from our veterans. Every day our emails are full of demands. Mr. President, it is our moral duty to stop the bleeding when we can and protect our labor force and their employers before it is truly too late.
Recognize Senator Martha Schrader.
Permission to return to courtesies?
Without objection. Please feel free to do so.
Well, colleagues, I'd like to welcome Congressman Kurt Schrader here today on the date of our 34th wedding anniversary. Happy anniversary, dear, and thank you for joining me on the floor today.
Well, it's nice to see you, Congressman. I'd like to tell you I've missed you. In the times I have. I call you every so often, but you do not call me back. So I know that you've gone over, as they say. But it is always a delight to see you. It's an honor and privilege that you would come to the State Senate today, and I do want to officially extend the courtesies to you, Kurt, Congressman Schrader. I understand I may see you even later. I hope so, in my backyard. So it's good to see you looking great, and please keep working hard back there for all of us. Good job. Are there any further courtesies or remonstrances? Message from the House. Reports from conference committees, reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 116 was distributed to members June 5th, and number 117 was distributed today. This information recorded in the Journal of State Report is so ordered. Special reports from special reports of special committees. Proposition motion. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I move that SCR 17 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and made a special order of business immediately.
Senator Devlin has moved that SCR 17 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and be made a special order of business immediately. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I think all of us believe that we should get to this resolution immediately.
Is there any discussion? If there is no objections, it is so ordered. We will now proceed to the special order of business. Clerk will read the resolution.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 17, congratulating Coach Daniel J. Miles and the Oregon Institute of Technology on success of men's basketball program.
Recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt.
Thank you, President Courtney. Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 congratulates Coach Danny Miles and Oregon Institute of Technology on the success of the men's basketball program over nearly 40 years. Danny Miles is an icon at OIT, in Klamath Falls, and among all collegiate coaches. As head coach of the OIT men's basketball team, his teams have won more than 7 out of every 10 games played for nearly 4 decades. This record has been compiled while playing in one of the toughest, most competitive leagues in the nation. In addition, Coach Miles routinely schedules his teams to play against the best non-league competition that is available. Everyone wants the opportunity to beat his Hustlin' Owls. Few are up to the task. In 2004 and again in 2008, Coach Miles' teams won national NAIA championships. 3 of his teams have reached the national championship game, 4 teams have reached the Final Four, 6 teams have reached the Elite Eight, and 12 teams have reached the Sweet 16. As a coach, he ranks number 6 in all-time victories in the history of men's collegiate basketball at all levels. In fact, he is currently tied with the legendary Adolph Rupp. Coach Miles was named National Basketball Coach of the Year in 2004 and once again in 2008. He was inducted into the NAIA Hall of Fame in 2001 and the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame in 1996. To my knowledge, no records are kept on the accomplishment, but it is also possible that Coach Miles has coached more collegiate academic All-Americans than any other coach in history. That is no accident. Coach Miles recruits good athletes with good academic records. From the first day, Coach Miles makes it clear to his players that the reason they are attending OIT is to acquire a good education. Simply put, if his players do not perform in the classroom, they are not allowed to perform on court. Young men come to OIT from all across the globe to play basketball at OIT. They do not come for the nightlife in Klamath Falls, colleagues. They come to play for one of the best basketball coaches that ever lived. Coach Miles has been recruited to serve as head coach at universities across the nation. He has remained at OIT because the Oregon Institute of Technology is his university. Klamath Falls is his home, and the Hustlin' Owls are his basketball team. This is one of the many reasons why Coach Miles was selected to receive the NAIA Coach of Character Award last year, a national award. I have never met a finer coach, a better developer of athletic and academic talent, and certainly I have never met an all-around better man than Danny Miles. I urge your yes vote on SJR 17. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Further discussion? Question is, now rise upon the third reading and final passage of SCR 17. Those who are in the bill should be passed. Will answer aye. Names called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Nelson. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsitt. Winters. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused, Carter and Walker, 28 ayes.
SCR 17, having received a constant majority, is declared passed. Senator Miles, the Oregon State Senator, has just given you its highest recognition. Congratulations. I recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate colleagues, Senate Democrats request a 15-minute caucus.
Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Republicans also request a 15-minute off-the-floor caucus.
Senate will go into recess until 10:50.
10:20. Excuse me, correction, made a mistake. Senate, we're going to recess till 10:20. Senate will please come to order. And the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Monsanderson, Monroe, Morset, Morse, Nelson, Prezonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. A quorum being present, the Senate will recess under the order. Propositions and motions and will resume under that order. So ordered. Objection. Return to courtesies. Recognize Senator Floyd Pazansky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'm going to ask that courtesies be extended from the Senate to one of the groups that's here today. I'm not sure if they're in the gallery right now or not, but it's the Oak Ridge Elementary School from the city of Oak Ridge. Rhonda Gardner is the group leader. They have 52. They're fourth graders from the Oak Ridge Elementary School, and if they're here today and right up there now, thank you very much for being here. And if you've already been, we'll catch up with you later. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Oak Ridge. If your students are there, I'd like to welcome you to the State Senate. Honor and a privilege to have you here. I'd like to extend the courtesies of the State Senate to you on this day. Thank you. We'll now turn to the regular order of the Senate's business, which is, I believe, propositions of motion. Recognize. What? Recognize Senator Boquist, please. Without objection, we turn to order courtesies. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to extend courtesies from the Senate to Ash Creek Elementary School and the fourth grade class that's visiting here from Monmouth. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you to Ash Creek Elementary School. There you are. I'd like to welcome you to the State Senate and extend the courtesies of the State Senate to you. Welcome to your state capital. Thank you. Are there any further courtesies? We'll now return to the regular order of the Senate business, which proposition motion. Recognize Senator Devlin. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the consideration of House Bill 2005 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Tuesday, June 9th calendar.
Senator Devlin has moved that the consideration of House Bill 2005 be taken from its place on today's calendar and moved to its place on Tuesday's June 9th calendar. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. We need to do a little bit more preparation for the presentation of this bill.
Is there discussion? All the question is on taking House Bill 2005 from today's calendar and placing it on Tuesday, June 9th calendar. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Recognize Senator Mark Haas, please.
I move the Senate concur in House amendments and repass Senate Bill 70.
Senator Mark Haas, I move the Senate concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 70. To your motion.
For at least the last 15 years, Department of Education has calculated state school funds for educated children who are hospitalized or in long-term care based on the number of beds or slots needed to be available at any time to serve students. Recently, the staff found that the state school funds cannot be drawn down this way. So Senate Bill 70 addresses this, and the House amendments make it even more clear than the Senate that this calculation is based on the number of slots available, not the maximum number of students who may be enrolled. Under the House amendments, expenditures from the state school fund will be less than they would have been under the Senate version of the bill. These are good changes, and I ask your concurrence of House amendments to Senate Bill 70.
is a discussion of the motion before us. Those of the pen that censure concur in the House amendments from E-Pass, Senate Bill 70 will answer aye as they came. Those opposed, no, clerk, please call the roll.
Krasinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker. Whitsett. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter. Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Girard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Monis Anderson. Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused, Cardin Walker, 28 ayes.
SB 70, MC, the constitutional majority is declared repassed. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. I move the consideration of SCR 16 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Wednesday, June 10th calendar.
Senator Devlin has moved the consideration of SCR 16 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on Wednesday, June 10th calendar. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. The carrier is actually excused from the floor, so we're just placing it on Wednesday's calendar.
The question is of taking SCR 16 from today's calendar and placing it on Wednesday's June 10th calendar. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is carried. Recognize Senator Bill Morissette.
Mr. President, we concur on the amendment on Senate Bill 174. This amendment specifies the circumstances under which the board will impose a $10,000 penalty, requires persons with doctor degree in psychology who is employed and practicing register within 24 months, otherwise they will be fined for practicing without a license. It does change the date of the implementation of Section 4 of the bill to 2011. Thank you.
Discussion. Those of the opinion that the Senate should concur in the House amendments from E-Pass Senate Bill 174 say aye. As names call, as opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Girard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Monis Anderson. Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Krasinski.
Aye.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused, Cardin Walker, 28 ayes.
Senate Bill 174, MC's constitutional majority is declared repassed. Clerk will read the bill. Excuse me, recognize Senator Bill Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 177B comes from the House with an amendment, and we urge a concurrence. It creates a State Board of Clinical Social Workers. It creates additional Title Act protections for non-clinical social workers by adding new voluntary licenses for those not practicing clinical social work, designate standards for certification and licensed clinical social workers, and prohibits the use of titles for individuals not qualified under the statute. This bill has been heavily worked on the Senate side. All 41 pages of it has been amended a number of times, and it's been worked on the House side. It's a good bill, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Discussion. Those who are the appendix Senate should concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 170. Several answer ayes. Name called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr. Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
No.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter. Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morris. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused Carter, Walker. Voting no. Atkinson, Farioli, George, Girard. 24 ayes.
Senate Bill 177 has received a council majority, declared repassed. Recognize Senator Chris Telfer.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 876.
Senator Telfer has moved the Senate concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 876. To your motion, please.
The amendment deletes the requirement that if a licensed practitioner prescribes a brand name immunosuppressant in connection with an organ transplant and an equivalent generic immunosuppressant drug is available, the brand name be dispensed and DHS pay for the brand name drug without exception if the department has determined that the drug is a narrow therapeutic index drug.
Thank you. Further discussion? Those who depend on the Senate should concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 876. Lance, I just need to call those opposed. No, clerk, please call the roll.
Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Porzanski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, President Courtney, President Courtney, excused Carter, Walker, voting no, Montes Anderson, Monroe, 26 ayes. Oh, wait. Excused Carter, Walker, voting no, Monroe, 27 ayes.
Senate Bill 876 has received constitutional majority, declared repassed. Recognize Senator Verger.
I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 942.
Senator Verger has moved that the Senate concur in the House amendments and repass Senate Bill 942. To your motion, please.
There have been no substantive changes to the bill, minor change to the name of the task force.
Thank you. Those of you that the Senate should, is there further discussion? Those of you that the Senate should concur in House amendments and repass Senate Bill 942 will answer aye. Senator, those opposed, no, clerk, please call the roll.
Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Farioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Schrader, Starr, President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused Carter, Walker, voting no, Farioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Whitsett, 23 ayes.
The Senate Bill 942 has received a constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Clerk will read the committee report and the minority report on Senate Bill 519.
President Courtney, your committee on rules, to whom was referred Senate Bill 519A, having had the same under consideration, respectfully forwards it back, recommending do pass the Engross bill. President Courtney, a minority of your committee on rules, to whom was referred Senate Bill 519A, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports it back, recommending do pass with amendments to the Engross bill, printed B. Engross minority.
I will now recognize Senator Diane Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the committee report on Senate Bill 519 be adopted.
Senator Diane Rosenbaum moves that the committee report on Senate Bill 519 be adopted. Would you now please repeat and explain the committee report?
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, Senate Bill 519A comes from your Committee on Rules. It's actually a very simple bill. It just states that employers may not discharge, discipline, or otherwise take adverse action against an employee who chooses not to attend an employer-sponsored meeting or communication, the primary purpose of which is to communicate the employer's opinion about religious and political matters. In addition, it creates a civil right of action if that provision is violated and requires employers to post a notice of employee rights under this law in a visible place. The bill also provides an exception for employers that are organized for religious or political organizations so that they may conduct their business without running afoul of this requirement. In the original hearings on this bill, we heard testimony from many people who had experienced problems with being forced to attend meetings that they chose not to attend, in some cases even being physically accosted, pulled back into their seats when they tried to leave these meetings and go back to work. There clearly is a need for this bill, and I urge your support for Senate Bill 519.
Thank you, Senator. The Chair will now recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 519.
Senator Farioli has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 519. Senator Farioli, to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, first of all, let me assure you that the issue of religious discourse is simply a smokescreen here. This bill is about political speech and nothing more than that. The minority report, in fact, protects the free speech rights of Oregon family businesses, exactly the opposite of what the majority report does. This type of communication is critical to the success of Oregon businesses. The minority report asks that Oregon voters be protected, Oregon workers be protected in their relationship between employees and employers by preempting any attempt to hinder communications between the parties. This is common sense. It's a common sense protection for fundamental free speech. Employees and employers are partners in their own economic well-being. It's imperative that they have a healthy, robust dialogue about their future and the future of their companies. And colleagues, any of these discussions about economics, about the way public policy affects these small businesses could be construed as political speech. Under the majority report, any of those discussions would be prohibited, penalized. It's unreasonable for us to place a wedge between employees and employers who are trying to navigate this treacherous economic climate. They need to have open and honest discourse. They need to be able to discuss issues that affect the company's well-being, the bottom line, the competitiveness of the company. Those all can be categorized and characterized as political conversations banned by the major bill. There are more than 250,000 Oregonians out of work today. They can't find work. Businesses are shutting down. Workers are being laid off every day. Businesses are finding it more and more difficult to survive in this economic and regulatory climate. Employers and employees need more conversation, more dialogue, more discussion of how their companies can become more competitive, better able to survive, more focused on the future. And all of those conversations can be considered political. Our minority report allows employers and employees to conduct business without the interference of government, without the fear of litigation, without the fear of penalty. The minority report actually creates the kind of environment that we want to see employers and employees enjoy in Oregon. Colleagues, the business associations in Oregon have looked carefully at Senate Bill 519, and there is broad opposition to this bill, which muzzles and renders ineffective the efforts of employers to communicate important details to their employees. Furthermore, and we pointed this out repeatedly in all discussions of Senate Bill 519, the major bill, undermines federally protected employer-sponsored meetings. Under federal law, the employer is free to have discussions with the employees in any issue that affects the employee's future and the employer's future as a business. In addition, Senate Bill 519, in my opinion and others, is constitutionally vulnerable under current federal Supreme Court case law. There is an opinion from our legislative council that says Senate Bill 519 doesn't violate the case law of the Supreme Court, but virtually every other council that has reviewed 519, from the business associations, from the private employers, has concluded that 519 is unconstitutional. It's very likely that if litigated, Senate Bill 519 would be found unconstitutional. The problem is that Senate Bill 519 represents an intrusion into area of labor law that's preempted by our federal law. The Supreme Court has said in multiple rulings that labor law is a turf that belongs to Congress. It is said that except for threats and promises, Congress wanted speech in this area to be unregulated. Unregulated, Mr. President. Ultimately, the Oregon State Legislature cannot override the will of Congress. And, colleagues, I believe that this Senate Bill 519, if the major bill passes, it faces a certain future. The Oregon Business Associations and Oregon employers will defend their right to free speech in court, and this bill will be found to be unconstitutional. Curtailing workplace communication between employees and employers is not what this legislature ought to be about. This is simply another effect, another attempt to extend the influences of unions who wish to curtail the ability of employers and employees to sit down and discuss the issues that affect their future without regulation and without interference. Mr. President, we urge an aye vote on the minority report for Senate Bill 519.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion on the motion to substitute the minority report for the committee report. Chair recognizes Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest on both the minority and the majority report.
Please state your conflict for the record.
Thank you, Mr. President. I own several businesses with a number of employees. There's at least one bill, House Bill 2496, that is going to raise taxes on small and family businesses that I would like to be able to discuss with my employees, and I'm sure my employees would like to discuss with me. And so I think this bill would prohibit that, and so I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Okay, your conflict will be noted for the record.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've been growing up on a farm. I worked very hard, obviously, for the family business. And you all know my father, and so you know that the way he treated employees was that they weren't employees, they were family. I remember growing up with people of different backgrounds, different creeds, different races, being invited to our house for Thanksgiving dinner because they didn't have any place to go. In my life, I cannot think of a time when we did not have employees that would bring up issues of religion or politics or their values to discuss on the job. When I became an employee after I graduated from college, outside of the family business, outside of the farm, then I became an employee, and I recognized that what happened to my employers was important to me. Meaning the free flow of communication. There is very few relationships that are so important in your daily life than your relationship between you and your employer, between you and the people who make your business possible, your employees. This relationship is important because that's where business owners without those people to work in your employment, your business is not successful. And as an employee, without your employer, you don't have a job. And the reason why this particular minority report is so very important is because I believe it's a sacred relationship between employers and employees, and that that line of communication always stay open. And that we as a state take the policy that that relationship is sacred and that people should be able to communicate, because there is nothing more fearful, especially in this type of economy, than the idea of losing one's job or being forced to shut down your business and watch your family and your friends lose their job because you can no longer have them on payroll. I know that people who are not employers have no idea of the emotional relationship you have with your employees as a small business owner and as a family business owner. I know you don't understand how responsible you feel as an employer to your employees who make your business successful. But I'll tell you that when people villainize employers and they're talking about the fact that somehow employers don't care, I will tell you this: no business I've ever worked in, none. No business I've ever owned, no business I've ever worked for, no business I've ever been involved with, did I feel like the employer and the employee didn't care about each other. Poll after poll after poll shows that employees are very, very, they trust their employer to give them accurate information about what's happening in the arena of politics that affect their business. Poll after poll show employers care what their employees think, and they want that communication open. And to think that we're going to vote on a measure that the minority report and the majority report are so far apart should show you the difference in perspective. I've served on both sides. I've been an employee and I've been an employer. And I will tell you what, anybody who thinks that employers are evil or employees are evil does not understand that relationship. The fact is that those two interests are the same. They care about each other. They work together. It is the preservation of that relationship that makes small and family business work in the state of Oregon. And to think that while we're laying off thousands of people around this state, that what we care about is whether or not unions can organize or whatever else, why people are being laid off, because let's face it, that's what the majority report's about. I say we stand strong on the premise that the relationship between Oregonians, that the open dialogue, the open free speech for Oregonians is sacred. And it's even more sacred when you talk about the fact that all of us are dependent on each other to make successful businesses work in the state of Oregon. And I urge you to support the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator George. I'll now recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, to the bill. Mr. President, I think the reason why it's so somber on the Senate floor this morning is because there is a real check in some people's spirit whether or not this is the right thing to do. I think there are some members who are in the majority that are thinking, you know what, this goes too far. And so I would talk to those members and ask them to support the minority report, because why would we ever risk harming the freedom of speech? We all know that Senate Bill 519, the majority report, is a one-sided bill. We know that it completely limits employer speech, and it does not limit anyone else's speech, namely the unions. That's what this bill is about. This is a labor bill against management bill. But let's play it all the way out. Let's take it to where it really might affect a small business. Let's take it out to the point of all of those notions that people have when they run for office and they go to a place of business and they want to meet the people that they're hoping to gain their votes from. Under this bill, you can no longer do that. Under this bill, someone running for office, whether it be school board, whether it be state representative, whether it be any other office, can no longer go to a place of employment and try to get to know somebody or try to get to know that business, because that would be against the law under Senate Bill 519. Why would we take that risk? Let's play it out even further. Let's say that there's a company that has a warehouse, and that warehouse has got a little realistic radio, little plug-in radio, and that plug-in radio is playing talk radio. Under this bill, somebody could sue and say, you know what, the radio that was playing talk radio offends me, and therefore it's illegal because management has allowed that radio to be played, and the political speech that is on that radio offends me, therefore I'm going to sue my employer. It doesn't say that in the bill, but we do know that Senate Bill 519 limits speech, and we do know that that is speech, and we do know that a management could allow that to be played in a warehouse, and we know that now management could be responsible. Why would we do that? We're limiting our speech. We're limiting employer speech. We're limiting, in a certain degree, accidental speech. Speech being played on the radio. We're limiting speech. Senator George made a fantastic comment about the relationship between employer and employee. And much like him, I've been in both roles. A smart employer knows that the happier your employees are, the more productive the company is. The more you build a team, the happier that the team will perform, the better the team will perform. We also know very much that, and oftentimes, people who get together around a lunchroom will discuss all types of things. Family tragedies, health care, which the employer usually pays for. Life, elections, all that now is banned because there is a small minority in Oregon who is pushing 519, and 519 limits speech. We know this. Some of you in the majority know this. And you've been asked and told that we'd really like you by the majority party to stand in unity and vote for 519. And you know in your heart of hearts that it's wrong. I would urge those who are on the fence to vote for the majority, to vote for the minority report. And let's make sure that this body does not end session with the second highest unemployment in America by limiting speech.
Thank you, Senator Axton. I recognize Senator Chris Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest with both the minority report and the majority report in that communications with my employees in the various businesses I have could affect my bottom line profitability.
Your potential conflicts of interest have been noted for the record, Senator.
To the bill?
To the bill, please.
Mr. President, colleagues, every Friday morning in my CPA practice, we have a mandatory staff meeting. And my staff is a family. We all consider each other family members, and we work as a team. So much as a team that they've managed to hold my firm together for these almost 6 months when I've been here and missing my Friday morning staff meetings. Over the years, my staff has, in those staff meetings, many times reverted to talking about our faith, sharing our walks with the Lord, and many times there's been prayer involved. We also spend much time talking about legislation, particularly tax issues, on how it affects the way we perform and do tax returns and other legal areas. My staff is very interested in politics, and many times we will engage in conversations regarding politics. This is a great family that I am proud to work with, and the communication is critical to us being productive and working in a great environment. This morning, Senator Berger eloquently spoke to us about this is not the time to hurt business with our employment numbers, our unemployment numbers being so high. I would encourage you to heed those words and vote for the minority report and maintain the ability for employers and employees to communicate openly. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, please. Senator Ferriero, do you wish to close, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I believe we're about to watch this session's version of bipartisanship in action. I believe we're about to watch the effect of the power of the public employees' unions on this body. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz.
Mr. President, I want to declare a potential conflict of interest on both minority and majority reports.
Please state your potential conflict of interest.
Communication with my employees is critical and could be impacted.
Potential conflict is noted. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Rosenbaum and by Senator McMetzger. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky. Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. All members are present and subject to the call. The question now arises upon the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor, I answer aye as the names are called. All those opposed, no. The clerk will now call the roll.
Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin.
Devlin?
No.
Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. President Courtney.
No.
Voting no. Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Krasonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Verger, Walker, President Courtney, 12 ayes.
The minority report has failed. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading of Senate Bill 519, as amended by the committee report. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 519, relating to mandatory workplace communications to employee about employers' opinions.
I recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, once again, I want to just state that this is a very simple bill, and common sense was mentioned in the previous debate, and this bill is a common sense bill, too. You know, in any time, people go to work to do their job, to do a good job, to do a good job for their employer, and so that they will feel proud of what they did at the end of the day. This bill does not in any way interfere with that. This bill simply stands for the proposition that people who do not wish to listen to opinions about religion or politics, but want to go back to work and do their job, have the right to do that. That really is all this bill does. So I want to use this time to address some of the things that I think are really misconceptions about this bill. First, that this would prohibit employers from holding meetings that they are currently holding. Colleagues, there's nothing in this bill that prohibits any employer meetings regardless of the subject matter. And this is specifically stated on page 2, lines 40 to 43 of this bill. All this bill says is that these meetings are voluntary. If somebody chooses to go back to work and do their job, they cannot be fired or otherwise disciplined for choosing not to attend. Next, this bill does not in any way prohibit an employer from conducting its business or communicating in any way with the employees that need that information. And this includes that employers, whether they be secular or religious, are not prohibited from communicating about their core mission. That's very clear. And in addition, the bill does not, although this hasn't come up yet, this bill does not prohibit an employer from firing or otherwise disciplining their employees for reasons unrelated to opting out of these meetings. And this has been verified with legislative counsel that what I just said is true. In addition, it's been said that this bill is constitutionally vulnerable, that it's federally preempted, and that it interferes with free speech. Well, our own legislative counsel, the lawyers that we listen to, has said that none of these things are true. And this is the opinion that we rely on. They wrote a multiple page opinion stating why the bill is not preempted and why none of these things are true. It was also mentioned that meetings in which employees bring up matters of religion or politics would be vulnerable to attack. Well, those meetings are not prohibited because those are voluntary communications on the part of those employees. And this bill, finally, does not say in any way, shape, or form that employers are evil. In fact, it says just the opposite, that we believe that employers are there to do a good job and their employees want to do a good job as well, and that that is the mission that most people have when they come to work. If they have unrelated matters that employers want to communicate, that that simply needs to be voluntary. So, colleagues, this bill, I think much has been said about this bill already that really is questionable, and I wanted to address those points. But I think, finally, the bill simply stands for a proposition that people have a right to go to work, to do their job, feel good about that, and if unrelated matters are brought up in meetings and they choose not to attend, that they simply can go back to work and continue to do their job. Colleagues, I urge your support for Senate Bill 519.
I recognize Senator Bruce Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in my now almost completed 6 regular sessions of the legislature, I've had the privilege of working on really important pieces of legislation, important things that were good for the state of Oregon. And every case those good, positive pieces of public policy were accomplished with Republicans and Democrats working together across the aisle, working with stakeholders together, bringing people together to help build Oregon and help make Oregon a better place. Colleagues, that's not what we see here in Senate Bill 519. In fact, we see quite the opposite. It's very clear. The letters on your desk delineate that. There is no bringing people together in this particular bill. This bill is about separation. It's about separating people, about separating employees and employers. It's not good public policy. It's the wrong way to go. It's hard for me to even understand how a bill like this gets on the Senate floor when you look at the state of Oregon's economy, when you look at the fact that we are bleeding jobs like crazy in Oregon, and here we are as the Oregon State Senate further regulating the private sector, adding additional regulations on employers in a time when most of our employers are working hard to maintain employment. Senate Bill 519 is an unconstitutional infringement on federal labor law. Senate Bill 519 is an unconstitutional infringement of employer free speech rights. Senate Bill 519 creates a new protected class of workers. This bill is completely one-sided, favoring favoring unions. It levies punitive penalties. Colleagues, Senate Bill 519 will curtail critical employer communications. Faith-based companies, especially faith-based companies, will be targeted in this particular bill if they talk about their mission. They don't have to be a faith-based company, except that the owners have strong faith and organize their company around those faith principles. Colleagues, this is wrong-headed legislation. It's wrong-headed in a good economy. It's especially wrong-headed in the economy we're faced with today. Colleagues, I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I understand the no vote on the minority report. It was quote-unquote procedural. And I can understand that. I disagree with it, but I understand it. Colleagues, I hope that you would vote your conscience on the bill. It's not a procedural vote. We need to look at the message we are sending to the people of Oregon. Not just with this bill, but many of the other bills that have been on this floor and will be on this floor before sine die. We are not sending a signal to the people of Oregon or the people who might want to come to Oregon that we are business friendly and open for business. And this bill exemplifies that unfortunate position we as a legislative assembly are taking. What we are saying is we are for the unions all the time, first and foremost, and we are not for business. We continue to put these restrictions on the ability of a business to do business in the state of Oregon. How in the world, in this environment, are we going to attract any new businesses to come into the state? We're not. Oregon is not a business-friendly state at the moment, and bills like this make us less business-friendly. This is the wrong thing to do. And by the way, I'm not going to impugn anybody, but many of the legal opinions we have been receiving over the course of this session, I think, are doubtful, and clearly this one is. It's prudent, colleagues, to get more than one legal opinion on any issue, and I find it interesting that most of the legal opinions on this issue are not with what we are hearing from our own counsel. Colleagues, this is a bad precedent. This is a bad bill. Please vote your conscience. Vote no on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Now I recognize Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to the bill. I'm very troubled by Senate Bill 519 because it really does provide a wedge between an employer and an employee. It does something else, and I don't think we've thought about it. It will provide tremendous problems as we move forward to try to implement some of our policies. And I'm thinking particularly in terms of work that is done by our own housing and community development that filters down to community action agencies and others, and their work requires that they do broad-based community organization. I want you to think about it, broad-based community organization. So if they're having a meeting and they're requiring the subject of all the entities in their communities, including faith-based and others, that they're talking about, we've created a problem because we can't have that kind of communication. The other thing that struck me when I read this was what kind of impact does it have in our medical, particularly our hospitals, delivery systems, which practically all of them that I know of are actually of a religious origin. I failed to grasp that you cannot train or call your staff to talk about such issues as the end of life. I just went through this with Ted. I failed to understand that you cannot call all of your members in to talk about some of the subjects which probably will end up talking about person's religion. I think we need to think through on a long range, who all is impacting by what we do and what we say through communication. That's the only way we talk to each other is through communication. When I had Jackie's ribs, part of my training, because not everyone understands service delivery, not everyone understands what it means to give of yourself in service. And one of my illustrations was to my employees, in the restaurant industry, servitude means the same thing as washing the feet of others like Christ did to the disciples. And if you do not want to have that kind of personality, you don't belong in this business. And so sometimes, and it was mandatory for my staff to come in to learn how to serve others. And I guess if I did that now under this bill, I probably would end up with a lawsuit. I think we really need to think about how we communicate to others. I think we really need to think about what barriers we create and what the fallout effect is, because I guarantee you this ripples down from our state agencies all the way down to where we deliver services in our communities. And community action agencies do have to broadly communicate with every entity of our community. And I urge your no vote.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. Conflict of interest. I own a business that this will impact, and this will directly impact my legislative staff. Thank you.
Your potential conflict of interest has been placed in the record. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, there are not many bills that come before us that elicit the kind of response that I have to this bill. There are not many times when your stomach literally rises in your throat, and this is one of those times for me. I've had the good fortune in my life of walking the walk in management in a large company. And this bill is an affront to everything that I have stood for in my life. The foundation of every organization, and it isn't just the business world, is communication. And to have a bill that emerges from this body that impedes my ability to communicate to my employees is a personal affront, and it undermines the ability of management to effectively communicate to employees. Now, I would like to point out in the bill, Mr. President, colleagues, specifically. The definition of political matters, and it refers to constituent group or activity, and then it further defines constituent group, which includes labor organizations. I have great respect for labor organizations. They have a role. When you have rogue employers that are abusing employees, they have a role. But I'd like to point out a comment that was made by the carrier with respect to this protects employees from unrelated matters. Colleagues, unions exist to talk about matters of importance and conditions of employment to employees and to companies. That's why they exist. That's the communication. It's matters of employment. It's the conditions under which you work. It's the conditions of the environment. It's the political conditions. There's a whole variety of things. Colleagues, this is not an innocuous bill. This bill has tremendous, tremendous import to the business community in Oregon. I encourage you, read these floor letters. They are impassioned, and they speak to the principles that we need to be attentive to when we pass legislation. Colleagues, again, please, don't pass this bill.
Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 519A be re-referred to committee.
Senator Jason Atkinson has moved that Senate Bill 519 be re-referred to the... Just one second. It came out. To the Rules Committee from whence it came. So I was just trying to get the clarification on that, although that was not its original committee. So the motion is to re-refer Senate Bill 519 to the Senate Rules Committee. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He is joined by Senator Rosenbaum and by Senator Rick Metzger. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
All members subject to the call are present. Senator Atkinson, speak to your motion to re-refer Senate Bill 519 to the Senate Rules Committee, please.
Mr. President, I believe it's appropriate to move this to the Rules Committee for the very reason that this body is clearly divided. I think there is a handful of members that really do not want to vote for this, and I believe that this is a serious affront to freedom of speech. I believe this also is an affront to freedom of religious expression, and I believe that the best place for this bill is not on the Senate floor. I believe the best place for Senate Bill 519 is back in committee to rest all summer long. And so, Mr. President, I would urge a yes vote on this motion to send this thing, not to place it on employers across Oregon, but to send it back to committee. I think it's a good motion, Mr. President. So this gives an opportunity for some of my colleagues that are real consternation about voting for Senate Bill 519 the opportunity to very respectfully move it back to committee. I think that's a better vote for a lot of members, and I would urge a yes vote on the motion.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on this motion? Okay. The question now arises upon the motion to re-refer Senate Bill 519 to the Rules Committee. All those in favor of the motion to re-refer the bill to the Rules Committee will say aye as a name call. All those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morset. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. President Courtney.
No.
Voting no. Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Prezonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Verger, Walker, President Courtney. 12 ayes.
The motion has failed. We're now back to discussion on the Senate Bill 519, and I recognize Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 519 as a person who is a strong supporter of the collective bargaining process, but also as a person who has worked in the private sector, both as a union member and as a member of management. This bill is directed at a problem that is a relatively narrow problem, and it is a very broad approach. It's a nuclear bomb against a fly. So to try to illustrate what I see are the problems with this bill, I have a series of questions of the carrier here, Mr. President, that I've shown the carrier, and she's been very cooperative about participating in this exercise, to really try to hone in on how this bill is actually going to affect the tens of thousands of employers that we have in Oregon. So, question of the carrier, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield?
Say will.
The carrier will yield.
Thank you. What are an employer's obligations to notify employees of agenda items and potential political topics under 519 so that they can decide whether they would attend a mandatory meeting?
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for giving me these questions in advance. As to the employer's obligation to notify employees, beyond posting of the rights availed employees under this bill, there is no prescribed requirement for other notices or announcements. The bill does not prescribe or limit how an employer communicates. As with most laws, it is up to the employer to comply with the law. The employer should take the steps necessary in their business to comply, and that would be up to their judgment.
Okay, another question, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield?
I will.
The carrier will yield.
Okay, just as a for instance, and I'm just picking names out of the blue, an owner of a Subway franchise calls a mandatory meeting with employees to discuss menu labeling legislation and how it would affect sales and customer service, and one employee decides to opt out of the meeting because it's of a political nature. Does this employee have the right under Senate Bill 519 to opt out of all media of communication regarding political topics, for example, email correspondence or a one-on-one meeting with the employer? And does this limit what an employer can say in an impromptu face-to-face meeting with the employee in the hallway?
Thank you again for that question. As to the method of communication, the bill does cover forms of communication that would be including the ones that you mentioned, but for the portion of the meeting that referred to the employer's business or matters necessary
to conduct business. The employee could be required to attend those. The bill simply restricts the employee from being forced to attend or disciplined for choosing to absent themselves from the portion that pertains, again, to religious or political matters.
Thank you for that answer. Another question, Mr. President?
Will the carrier yield?
I will.
Carrier will yield.
Thank you. A cannery owner calls a mandatory meeting with the entire workforce to discuss how unionization would affect the business and shuts down the plant and all operating machinery for the duration of the mandatory meeting. If an employee chooses to opt out of this meeting, is it the employer's responsibility to find alternative work for the employee, or if no alternative work is available, is the employer still required to pay the employer for that unproductive time, the employee for that unproductive time?
Thank you for the question. This bill does not mandate any employer action with regard to how or when to operate a business, its machinery, hours, or assignment of work. The bill does not dictate that alternatives be provided, only that no punishment occur. So it would be up to the employer to determine what the employee should do as an alternative.
So to follow up, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield to another question?
I will.
Carrier will yield.
So if no alternative is available, would the employee have to stay on the premises during the mandatory meeting, or could they leave during that time, and would the expectations differ between salaried and hourly workers?
Once again, the bill does not address, nor is it intended to address, attendance policy. Presumably, the employer has an existing policy or past practice as to attendance on the job. At such times, work is unavailable or machinery, for instance, is out of commission, but that is not a matter addressed by this bill. It would seem that the employer's existing policy and practice would cover that circumstance, but just based on common sense, if the employee is being paid, then presumably the employer wants the worker to be on the premises. If the employee is not being paid, presumably the employer doesn't need the employee to be on site. But that would just be speculation, as attendance is not a matter addressed by this bill. And as far as the expectation about salaried versus hourly workers, the method of worker payment is also not addressed in this bill. As in most areas of the law, there is on page 2 of the bill some more specific language providing clarity around executive and administrative personnel, but that, once again, does not address the matter of how anyone is paid. And that last portion was an amendment added as a clarification.
Thank you.
Senator Betsy Johnson has yielded her time. Proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Johnson. Another question to the carrier, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield?
I will.
The carrier will yield.
A promotion team conducts their regulatory mandatory meeting but informs the staff beforehand that the bulk of this meeting, 50 minutes, will focus on political topics and the final 10 minutes devoted to assigning sampling jobs for the next week. An hourly employee opts out of this meeting for political reasons and as a result does not receive a job assignment. Under Senate Bill 519, would this be considered unfair employment action on the part of the employer because they did not receive a job assignment and therefore lost wages for the week?
Thank you for that question. In that theoretical instance, if the employer arranged such a strange scheme for conducting the meeting and assigning work, it would seem that the employee would probably have a cause of action under this bill. If the employer simply assigned the work first and then said, I'd like to talk about some political issues, and anyone who wants to stay, please do so, but you're free to go if not, then this would never even come up. It should be fairly easy to comply just by using some basic courtesy and respect for employees' boundaries on these issues, which most employers do already.
Thank you. Another question, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield?
I will.
The carrier will yield.
After opting out of a mandatory meeting on a political topic, an employee shows gross negligence in the workplace and 2 days later is fired as a result of that gross negligence. The employee attempts to make the case that he was fired as a result of not attending the meeting, not as a result of his negligent actions. Does the employee have a cause of action to pursue a case against his employer?
Thank you for that question. I appreciate the opportunity to clarify this. And this is the kind of thing that could happen right now, even without this law, for a variety of people. Frivolous suits happen all the time by employees who are fired for gross negligence but try to hide behind some other circumstance, whether it's age, race, religion, gender, weight, disability, or some other behavior. But negligence is negligence, and if the employer has followed the law and his or her own human resource procedures, this frivolous circumstance would be denied like any other. Negligent people with an axe to grind who want to work the system can always find a way to grind that axe and try to dodge responsibility. That would be true with or without this bill. And just further to clarify, this bill does not prohibit in any way employer disciplinary action, whether it's termination or other action, for matters unrelated to the employee's refusal to attend a meeting for religious or political matters.
Another question, Mr. President.
Will that carry you?
I do.
The owner of a farm calls regular workplace safety meetings mandated by OSHA for his entire workforce. During one meeting, an employee asked the employer to explain an upcoming immigration bill and how it would affect their workforce. Is the employer allowed to answer freely, must he pause and give time for employees to leave the room if they feel uncomfortable with a political topic? And if so, how long does the employer need to give the opportunity for the employee to leave the meeting?
Thank you. This bill does not prohibit employers from answering questions, speaking, communicating, or sharing information. If the employee asks the question, that would seem to be a voluntary choice by that employee to discuss those matters, and therefore the employer would be perfectly within their rights to respond.
Senator Mark Hass has yielded his time. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. A final question.
Would the carrier yield to a question?
Yes, I will.
The carrier will yield to a question.
Thank you. An employer calls a mandatory meeting to discuss his opinions on unions. Only one employee attends and 20 employees opt out of the meeting. After the meeting, the employee who attended is shunned and harassed by his coworkers for being anti-union. In this case, what are the employer's responsibilities to protect this particular workers? If he calls a mandatory meeting to discuss harassment as a result of the previous union meeting, are the employees who are victimizing their colleague allowed to opt out of this meeting as well because it's related to unions? And what recourse do an employer and the harassed employee have in this situation?
Harassment is harassment regardless of this bill. This situation could arise right now for any number of reasons, whether it's about unions, race, family status, whatever. The employer's obligation to protect the employee in that circumstance is just the same as it is now. Harassment is wrong, and it shouldn't be tolerated. Hopefully, the employer already believes that and has a policy in place whether or not this bill passes. As to meetings held to address the harassment, as you have described it, the meeting wouldn't be about unions. It would be about the harassment, which is behavior, not opinions, or enforced listening. Nothing in this bill prevents an employer from dealing with this sort of despicable employee behavior. And as far as what recourse an employer and the harassed employee have in this situation, again, that's a circumstance which could come up right now, and the laws dealing with harassment do not change regardless of this bill. The full range of actions is available to the employer now, and they remain available after this bill passes. It should be noted that in this circumstance, the employer's greatest liability is running afoul of the National Labor Relations Act, not this bill. If the employer took action against the pro-union employees and they felt it was because they were pro-union and not for this harassment behavior, they could file an unfair labor practice complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, and that can happen right now, and the bill would in no way impact that potential.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you to the carrier for your patience and thoroughness in answering these questions. The reason I wanted to get these on the record is this bill is alarmingly broad. It is full of the potential for unintended consequences, and that's why I asked these questions, to try to at least get something on the record about what the legislative intent is. Basically, this bill was introduced at the request of the Oregon AFL-CIO, And so it's very clear that this bill is aimed at those situations where a union is trying to come into a workplace and organize that workplace. There are already very tight requirements on what an employer can and cannot do in those situations. Employer cannot coerce employees. They can't take negative action against the employees for their union activities. They can't fire them. These are all prohibited under the National Labor Relations Act, as are promises of benefits if the employees vote against the union. But this bill doesn't limit it to those circumstances. This bill affects tens of thousands of Oregon employers 365 days of the year, 24 hours a day. And colleagues, employers, if they mess up on this, and this prohibits them from taking any adverse employment action against an employee for the things that are prohibited in this bill. If they mess up and they get it wrong, I'm reading from page 2 of the bill, lines 10 through 16, the court may award a prevailing employee all appropriate relief, including injunctive relief, rehiring or reinstatement of the employee to the employee's former position or an equivalent position, back pay and reestablishment of any employee benefits, including seniority, to which the employee would otherwise have been eligible if the violation had not occurred, and any other appropriate relief as deemed necessary by the court to make the employee whole. The court shall award a prevailing employee treble damages, together with reasonable attorney fees and costs. Colleagues, if you are a small employer in Oregon who is struggling to get by, especially in an economy like this, you cannot afford to take a chance on this kind of legal exposure. This is a devastating liability that we are placing on employers for misinterpreting the broad language of this bill. The issue of constitutionality has been brought up. I believe the proponents of this bill are correct. It does not directly prohibit speech. The employers can talk on and on as long as they want. What this bill does is it sets up two separate rules of employment based on the content of speech. So if an employer wants to hold a meeting on political subjects or unionization, we'll leave religion out of it. I'll talk about that if somebody wants to. But if they want to have a meeting on politics or religion, that's one set of employment rules. If they want to have it on any other subject, that's another set of employment rules. These are employment rules based on content. We have the strongest free speech provisions in our Oregon Constitution in the entire country. We are stronger than the First Amendment. The court has upheld all kinds of things that many of us consider inappropriate, even repulsive, on the grounds of free speech. What chance does a separate set of employment rules based on the content of speech have in our Supreme Court? I say next to nil. This bill is, just to talk about the religious piece for a minute, any employer these days who's dumb enough to have a meeting to try to coerce employees into adopting their religious faith probably deserves whatever this bill could throw at them. It actually might help to pass the bill to protect them from themselves. It doesn't happen. Religious orientation, like other orientations and like age and gender, are protected classes. So an employer who creates any kind of hostile work environment based on religion is asking for trouble under statutes that are even stronger than Senate Bill 519. So religion was thrown in there, I agree, as a smokescreen. This bill is about unionization, but it applies so much more broadly than unionization. It subjects Oregon employers to devastating liability if they misinterpret the terms of this bill. Colleagues, Senate Bill 519 is the mother load of unintended consequences. I urge a no vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Ted Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I appreciate the speech of our previous colleague. I believe that what she said was absolutely accurate. Alarmingly broad, devastating consequences. Mr. President, I would like permission to read from printed material. Permission to read from printed
Please
material,
Please
proceed
Mr. to President? Do so. Please
Thank
continue.
You. I have the AOI floor letter in hand. Colleagues, you can follow along if you'd like. AOI strongly opposes Senate Bill 519A. Mr. President, in fact, so does Association of Nurseries, Oregon Small Business Coalition, Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Association, National Federation of Independent Business, Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Strongly opposes Senate Bill 519A. The perception among employers is that this piece of legislation is the worst employment-related bill to emerge from the 2009 legislature. It is made worse because the measure appears to be a direct attack on employers at the exact time that many are fighting to remain viable and hold on to every employee in the current economy. If this legislation becomes a law in its current form, it will severely inhibit an employer's ability to communicate with employees and would also hurt Oregon's ability to attract much-needed jobs into this state. Oregon would be the only state in the nation with such a law. We believe this is a poor distinction, particularly if the state has any interest in attracting employers to grow or locate in Oregon. Urge a no vote, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Dave Nelson, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. A question to the carrier, please.
Carrier, yield to a question.
I will.
The carrier will yield.
Yes. Thank you. I was just wondering on this bill, we're under mandatory sexual harassment training. Is it political? Do we have to do this? We have legislative staff. We're talking about political issues. Are we prohibited from making and requiring mandatory meetings?
Thank you for that question, and I would just refer you to page 2 of the bill, lines 34 to 36, which address matters that an employer is required by law to communicate, and so sexual harassment training, which covers an unlawful matter, would come under that provision, or any other meeting for the purpose of safety or a matter that is a legal matter.
Yes, another question, Mr. President.
Will the carrier yield?
I will.
Carrier will yield.
The second part of my question was, okay, you have legislative staff, you're involved with political meetings, everything you do is political. Can they just say no?
Thank you for the question. No, they could not. And once again, referring to the bill, if an employer is either a political employer where that is their primary function and that would then be the employer's business, the provisions of this bill would not apply, nor would they apply to a religious organization that had that as their primary purpose, communicating about religious matters.
Okay. I recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a bill that is about unintended consequences, and I gave most of my talk about them when we were discussing the Minority Report, but I want to talk about something that the good senator from Portland discussed when we were talking about religious issues, and it brought to mind that all of us have mentors in our professional fields, and there is a mentor of mine, actually, and I happen to know that this person is a mentor for a number of members on the floor who runs a business in the state of Oregon. I got to be the keynote speaker at their annual mandatory meeting of all their employees. This particular employer has set up their business based on their values, based on their Christian values, but it's not a business that has anything to do with religion, meaning the way they treat their customers and the way they treat their employees reflect the values of the company. That is the fundamental way they run their business. And if you knew this person, you knew this company, you would understand exactly what I'm talking about. They have an annual meeting of all their employees. Some 300 individuals show up between the employees and their spouses. It is mandatory. They come and they listen to speakers who talk about leadership. They talk about values. They talk about why we treat people with the highest ethical standards. They bring people in from all kinds of different political, religious perspectives to talk about the importance of values in business. There's no doubt that I suppose the issue of values in our day and age may seem something that we don't care about. In fact, we have whole committees that are dedicated to trying to instill protections for consumers because businesses have lost their values. This company makes it as part of their core values of their company. Every employee through these mandatory meetings understand that their company is a moral and ethical company that treats its employees and its customers with respect, honesty. These mandatory meetings do have a certain, I suppose, religious feel to them. And I suppose somebody could make the argument, having been there, that conversations that happen with speakers that are inviting in clearly have religious overtones. And it was a religious meeting at times, I suppose. That particular meeting would be considered, and I just have no doubt, having read the bill and had to attend the meeting, that meeting would violate this particular bill. Because the values that company bases their entire company off of stem from the owner's religious values. And I think that what happened is the good senator from Portland was discussing these different things. It talks about the unintended consequences of this particular piece of legislation. There's no doubt, based off just the conversation we've had here on the floor, that this particular piece of legislation is poorly drafted. There are legal questions that are unanswered. In a bipartisan way, we've expressed our concern that there are legal issues that this will be subject to. And the unintended consequences are far-reaching. There is no doubt that the unintended consequences of Senate Bill 519A are incredibly broad. With that, I think it's appropriate this time, Mr. President, if I could, to move to indefinitely postpone Senate Bill 519.
Thank you, Senator George. Is there further discussion?
Mr. President, I move to indefinitely postpone Senate Bill 519.
Senator, George has moved to postpone, to indefinitely postpone Senate Bill 519. Let me just make sure. Okay. The motion has been made to postpone Senate Bill 519 indefinitely. Oh, you want to do the call? All right. Senator Jason Atkinson is demanding a call. Senator Jeff Cruz is demanding a call. And, Senator Fred Gerard has demanded a call. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant Arms will attend, and the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dinkfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prezonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
All present.
All those subject to the call present. To your motion, please. Senator George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that the issues that have been brought up on this floor are far-reaching, and I think there's enough concern about this particular piece of legislation that it deserves a pause by this body. And we have a number of special sessions that are going to be coming up where this issue could be properly addressed with all of the concerns that have been brought up. And I think that above all things, if there's one thing that we do that we can agree on in a bipartisan way, is that we shouldn't put legislation out that has unintended consequences, has massive legal questions pending that have not been answered. And the fact is it could have devastating effects on our state, especially when the measure has been demonstrated through debate that it is poorly written and needs to be addressed. So I urge everyone to vote to postpone this measure.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Ted Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this is a procedural motion, and everybody knows that, but I'd like to point something out to our good colleagues across the aisle. This is not about substituting the minority report for the majority report. This is simply postponing this measure indefinitely, which would end the alarmingly broad effect and the devastating unknowable consequences that we've heard about. It's an opportunity, colleagues, for us to sidestep this issue, just to put it aside, to indefinitely postpone it. Colleagues, it is, again, an opportunity, not necessarily for the minority party, but an opportunity that we were offering to the majority party to put this issue aside because of its divisiveness and its unknowable consequences. I urge an aye vote on this motion. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of this motion, mainly out of the confusion of what I've heard. We are a public body as defined as ORS 174-109. It would be subject to this law. And then I heard somebody say, as an answer to a question, we're a political organization. And I think we need to postpone this debate.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, I rise in support of this motion for three reasons. The first reason is, once again, as I made in a previous motion, this motion also, if you are on the fence, this gives you an opportunity to say, wait a minute, I'm uncomfortable with this bill. This bill does not represent me and my values. I would just like to postpone it. Rather than voting for 519, we have the ability with a simple aye vote on this motion to postpone. Number two, colleagues, if you've ever considered yourself friendly towards business, here is an opportunity for you to not vote for a bill that business, at least the businesses in my district and the businesses who are here in the building, are unanimous in opposition to. The third reason is, Mr. President, as I said way back several times ago on this bill, about an hour ago on the minority report, why in the world would the Oregon State Senate limit speech? Why would we limit religious speech? Why would we limit political speech? Why would we limit any kind of speech? For that reason, Mr. President, Senate Bill 519 is a divisive, bad bill. It's divisive for a bad reason. And I believe that this divisive bill should not be sent to the House of Representatives, where undoubtedly, with twice as many people, they are going to melt down for twice as long. I would urge supporting the postponement motion, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bruce Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the motion.
To the motion, please.
I stand in support of this motion. As I spoke a few long minutes ago about the main bill, the best that this legislature has to offer is when Republicans and Democrats work together to forward good public policy for the state of Oregon. Colleagues, this bill, Republicans and Democrats are working together across the aisle to urge no votes on this bill. There is a bipartisanness in this chamber. The bipartisanness in this chamber is against this bill. That should send a message to all of us that the proper public policy, and as it relates to this bill, is for it to go back to be postponed so that we can deal with it in another day. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator George, do you wish to close on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, colleagues, I urge, I know that we have a tradition of going along with party line votes when it comes to issues of procedures, but I really view this particular motion as being one of merit. This has nothing to do with procedure. This has to do with the merits of the bill. We all know on this floor that this bill is poorly drafted, has unintended consequences. And the idea that we are going to not be the thoughtful body, that we are not going to stand to the tradition of the Oregon State Senate and work on a bill that we know has problems, I think is discouraging, I think, to everyone that we would sit here and recognize that we're sending a flawed product to the House of Representatives at this time that could have such huge ramifications. And I urge everyone to vote for the motion to postpone. Thank you, Mr. President.
The question is on the motion. Those in favor of the motion to postpone indefinitely Senate Bill 519 will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Whitsett. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Yes.
Bates. Bonamici. Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
No.
Carter. Devlin.
No.
Dingfelder. Farioli.
Aye.
George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prasansky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Ferger. Walker. President Courtney.
No.
Voting no. Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Prasansky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Ferger, Walker, and President Courtney. 12 ayes.
The motion has failed. For the discussion, recognize Senator Farioli.
Mr. President.
No, Senator Farioli, you need to sit down. You've already spoken, I believe, on the bill. Is that correct?
Caucus.
Well, I was going to recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt under discussion. Do you wish to discuss?
After Senator Whitsitt, please, Mr. President.
Whitsitt, do you wish to speak on this measure?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would request a question of the carrier, please.
Would the carrier yield to a question, please?
Yes, I will.
Thank you, Senator. The question is, does any other state in the nation have a law that encompasses the provision of Senate Bill 519B?
Thank you, Senator, for that question, and the answer to your question is yes. New Jersey passed into law a similar but not identical bill in 2006.
Thank you, Senator, for that answer. Mr. President, it would appear that at least 48 other states do not have this critical labor relations problem that we're debating here on the floor today. Only Oregon and perhaps New Jersey have a possible problem with the situation that has brought forth the Senate Bill 519B. Mr. President, this is a bad bill, and we should vote no. This is a time when this body really should get together and understand that partisan politics is inappropriate. We should not. It doesn't make any difference who supports us, who doesn't support us. A bad bill is a bad bill. And I would really urge a no vote on this, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Farioli?
Mr. President, the Republicans request a brief water cooler conference.
The Senator Farioli has requested that the Republicans go to the water cooler for a conference. The Senate will stand at ease while that is being done, please. Senate will come back to order, please. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Yes, Mr. President, I call the previous question.
Senator Brian Boquist has called the previous question. I believe that cuts off the debate. Is that right? No, it does not. What is it? That cuts off the debate. That will allow the person who can close to close. You do understand that, Senator Brian Boquist. The motion is made to call a previous question, which means if it's over, it's over right now if this passes. So is it debatable? It's not debatable. So is there all those in favor of moving the previous question? Will please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, no. Well, that motion has carried. Okay, that's really surprised me. It's a good move. I don't know. Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close on the measure?
Very briefly, Mr. President, and I want to thank my colleagues for a vigorous, though somewhat lengthy, debate. But I do want to clarify a couple of things that were said, because I think just asserting something over and over does not make it true. And so I want to refer back to the language of the bill. Specifically, I think there has been some consternation about the prohibition on communicating about religious matters and whether that would extend to values, things like service or end-of-life matters. Colleagues, in the bill on lines 19 and 20, religious matters are defined as religious affiliation or the decision to join or not join, support or not support a bona fide religious organization. So that's a very narrow definition. If you are talking about urging somebody to join a specific religion, that would be covered, but anything beyond that would not be covered. It has been said that this bill is anti-business, that it will send a message that we are not open for business here in Oregon. Colleagues, I think nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the bill basically will give employees the right to come to work, do their job, do a good job for the employer, and not be there in fear of being fired for things that are unrelated. The bill is, it's been said the bill is one-sided, that it doesn't apply to unions. Well, it does apply to unions because unions are employers too. But it is simply the case that unions do not, when they are trying to do something else other than an employer, have the ability to force anyone to attend a meeting or to listen to them. So in that sense, it doesn't apply because it just shouldn't apply. So colleagues, this country, I believe, and I think we all agree, was founded on some basic principles. Among those is the freedom of speech. But the freedom of speech does not extend to me being able to force you all to listen to me. That is all this bill is saying. It doesn't prohibit any meetings. It certainly doesn't prohibit meetings related to the employer's business. It just says those meetings need to be voluntary and no one can be fired or disciplined because they choose to attend. I think that's common sense. I think it's a simple proposition. And colleagues, I urge your aye vote, and I respectfully ask, Mr. President, for a call of the Senate.
Senator Dan Rosenbaum has asked for a call of the Senate, joined by Senator Ted Ferrioli and Senator Rick Metzger. Doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Pass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morset, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
All present.
All those subject to call are present and all are present. Question arises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 519. Those who are of the opinion the bill shall pass will answer aye in the name of the call, and those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Winters. No. Atkinson.
No.
Bates.
No.
Bonamici.
No.
Boquist.
No.
Burdick.
No.
Carter.
No.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli.
No.
George. Gerard, Hass, Johnson,
no.
Cruz,
no.
Metzger. Monis Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Atkinson, Boquist, Burdick, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Johnson, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters. 16 ayes.
Senate Bill 519, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Actions on executive appointments that require the Senate confirmation. The introduction and the first reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 980, relating to certification of public safety officers and declaring an emergency.
These are transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate measures. We're under the third reading of Senate measures. Without objection, the remaining Senate measures will be carried over until tomorrow's calendar. First reading of House measures. Second reading of House measures.
House Bill 2058, relating to regulation of health professions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2194, relating to Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. House Bill 2371, relating to privacy of identification documents. House Bill 2682, relating to commercial security release and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3450, relating to carbon monoxide and declaring an emergency.
These are passed the calendar. Third reading of House measures. Without objection, the third reading of the House measures will be carried over till tomorrow's calendar, which is June 9th, Tuesday. Other business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 128 and 129 were distributed to members June 5th. The referrals will be recorded in the Journal and State Report and is so ordered. Under announcement, recognize Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Finance and Revenue will meet at 1:15.
Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate rules will still meet at 1. There is no Democratic caucus given the hour, so people are free for lunch.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferriero.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Republicans, being on time, under budget, and without the need for new taxes, will not be caucusing today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Joanne Verger.
Mr. President, the Public Safety Subcommittee will hold public hearings this evening at 6 p.m.
There are no further announcements, and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 9:45 Tuesday, June 9th.